times. When my angel heard the subject announced, the treasures of the subconscious, he said, "You know, this afternoon I was flying over a psychiatrist's couch, and a beatnik came in to the psychiatrist and said, 'Something is wrong with me. I have a compulsive desire to shave and take a bath.'" Now, our subconsciousness that we have to deal with tonight is just a little bit different. And we're going to go into an excursion, well, into Freud for a moment. And going back to all my years of teaching, I advance immediately to the blackboard to explain Freud and his theory in, I trust, simple terms. As you know, he had much to do with dreams, but there was a 4th or 5th century, a pre-Christian century book written in Egypt on the subject of dreams. In the Middle Ages, there was a doctor, a philosophical doctor, who said that physicians were wont to examine the dreams of their patients in order to determine their character. But Freud brought something very new and very important. And this is the way we will illustrate it. The subconscious and the conscious mind are simply divided. This we will call the conscious mind. Now, the subconscious mind is very deep. And these, I will tell you everything I draw. These are stairs. And down here is the basement. In this basement is what Freud calls id, I-D, id. Id in Latin, he used the Latin expression, means that. Just that. At the top of the stairs is a sensor. The only man I can draw. And he has a club in his hand. Now, down in this subconsciousness, down in the id, there are a number of drives, instincts, urges, and inclinations. Basically, they are the will to pleasure. More commonly, the sex instinct. Now, these instincts that we have try to get upstairs into consciousness. But moral taboos, convention, society, commandments and the like, repress them. And as soon as one of them comes up, sensor cracks it over the head. The result is that down here in the id are a number of our repressed thoughts. And it's very much like our own cellar. We open the cellar door and throw down old papers and junk and discarded elements. Where does this id come from? Is it made up solely of the thoughts that we repress? No, not solely, because where did we get this instinct of ours? Everybody has it. So this id, and much that is in it, and this is important, came from the outside. The outside. First of all, it came from our environment. We would never have anything in our heads if we had not seen or touched or smelled something. And then another psychiatrist, by the name of Carl Jung, said that down in the subconsciousness, there was also what he called the myths of the human race. He called it the collective unconsciousness. But the point is, they come from the outside, though they are here in the id. Now, whenever we speak of the unconsciousness, we always think of it in those terms, particularly Freudian terms, because he has popularized the idea. Haven't we anything else down there besides that? I think we have. Now let me test you. I'm going to use a word. And I'm going to give you a few seconds to allow you to develop your thoughts. The word is temptation. You thought of something dirty, didn't you? Yes, you did. You were thinking of something nasty, something you shouldn't be doing. Why? Why, as soon as we use the word temptation, do we always have to think of something wrong? Well, partly from this emphasis, partly that. Are we ever tempted to do anything good? Didn't you ever have an inspiration, for example, to be kinder to people? Hasn't a husband had an inspiration to be more kind, for example, to his wife? Rich man, maybe he ought to give some of his money to the poor. And another one is tempted to be more patient under trials. Then he received all kinds of inspirations to be better. For example, to be temperate, giving up excessive drinking and so forth. Isn't that true? Why does that word temptation have the monopoly of those things that, we say we're throwing down into the cellar part of our lives? Now, I want to suggest that in the subconsciousness there's another treasure. So, here we have exactly the same planes of the mind divided. And at the top is the censor. He's got a club. And these are the cellar stairs going down. But there's something good down here. And I have to give it another name. Now, Freud gave a Latin name to this, the id, so we're going to use a Greek name. And this thing that is down here is called, we're going to call it the pneuma. The Hebrews would have called it ruah. If we take just this side of the subconsciousness, and it's very true and real, then we have only just the earth and sand and mud. But isn't there something in the earth besides mud and dirt and sand? Gold and silver is hidden there. Aren't there wine cellars in a basement as well as rubbish? And sometimes garbage? Do we not have good thoughts? As well as we have very evil thoughts? Now, where do these thoughts come from? These inspirations? Well, the id came from the outside. As we said, our experience, our environment, our animal ancestry, heritage of the human race, collective unconsciousness, call it whatever you please, and adopt whatever theory of psychiatry that you please. So too, the inspirations, the good thoughts, another kind of temptations, pass through this subconsciousness. And this pneuma, too, comes from the outside. It operates on the inside, yes. But it comes from the outside. I'm not going to say where it comes from. It's just from the outside.
Now, it sends up, not just, for example, a will to pleasure. It sends up a will to happiness, a will to meaning, a will to peace. And what does the sensor do now? Oh, the sensor, as this sensor will sometimes repress the things that are dedicated only to carnal pleasure, so this one is going to repress all the good temptations. And this, he's got really seven clubs up there. One is pride, and the other is covetousness, lust, anger, envy, gluttony, and sloth. They're all up here, and he tries to keep them down. Just as Freud said, the superego tries to keep down these sexual desires. All right, then there are treasures in the subconsciousness which are worth studying. We're going to emphasize, first of all, that these come from the outside. Now my angel is going to clean off the blackboard. Be careful of the stairs, angel. Be careful of the stairs. Apropos of the pneuma entering into our lives, I read just a short time ago a newspaper item of an incident in Los Angeles. It seems that this truck driver who was on a highway traveling about 40 or 50 miles an hour saw before him a carton box, not very large. He said every carton box that he ever saw on a highway, he always ran over. He said he took a kind of a delight in running over a carton box and crushing it. He said it gave him a sense of power. When he saw this carton box, he said he swerved his truck violently to the side to avoid it, pulled up on the side of the road, went back to the carton box. What was in it? A three-year-old boy who had crawled into the box and was making his way across the highway. And they said to him, "What made you do it?" He said, "I don't know what made me do it. I haven't any idea. I don't know where it came from." He said, "Maybe it was God. I don't know." How often, for example, a soldier in battle, and we hear of many such instances where he will suddenly get out of his trench or comparative safety in a trench, make his way out to the battlefield under fire of the enemy in order to rescue a buddy. He's given great praise for it. What will he generally say? He would generally say, "Anybody else would have done it. Well, why did you do it?" "Well, the thought just came to me that I should." Now, this was something that was not part of the soldier's life, as it was not part of the truck driver's life. But it influenced him. One day, I was visiting a Carmelite convent of nuns, and they are cloistered, but this particular day, it was a very rare day. They had opened the cloister to visitors. And one of the very wealthy men of the town came in to visit the sisters, and in company with many others, they went up on the roof. And from the top of this convent, they could look down over the city. There was, first of all, a gully. And then far off was a hill. And on the hill,
a beautiful mansion. And one of the party of this rich man said, "Sister, just suppose that before you came here to lead this life of penance, suppose you could have lived in that home and had all the wealth, the prestige, the sociability and gaiety that goes with it. Would you have left it for this?" He says, "That is my home." "Why did you do it?" He said, "There was always something inside of me that was welling up into my conscious mind that told me that I should do this. And I would be happy. And I am happy." So there is something else in our subconscious mind, therefore, besides the base. And it is a pity that we always, always have to think of temptations as being solicitations to the things that are wrong, when there are many and many more that are solicitations to what is right. We resist probably more temptations to goodness than we ever do to badness. I'm sure we do. All of us. We give way to the id far more than to the pneuma. Of course, it costs something to obey the pneuma, because we generally have to surrender something. Now, what does this pneuma do when it gets into us? Well, let me see. If I took a tennis ball and I rolled it across the table here, that tennis ball would go in a straight line, unless it were diverted by a superior force or by my hand. So too, when we are going in a certain direction, we continue in that direction unless some superior power diverts and changes us. And what does it generally is this pneuma, which has the character of love, it introduces a new love. Like a boy that I knew of, he had dirty fingernails, he hardly ever washed his face, he would come to table with dirty clothes. The parents begged, coaxed, pleaded, tried to bribe. Nothing would ever induce him to give up his dirty clothes and dirty habits. And one day, he went out, he didn't slam the door. He closed it gently. And the next day, he came down dressed, collar and tie, neat, fingernails clean. What had happened? He met Susie. Susie changed everything in his life. And that's something like the pneuma. The pneuma introduces a Susie into our lives. And because it's a new love, we completely change. Now, take, for example, the case of Tolstoy, the great Russian novelist. Tolstoy was at a point of committing suicide. And this is a further illustration of the idea that I have just mentioned, namely, that we continue in a line of evil and despair, and hopelessness and so forth, unless this power comes in from the outside. Tolstoy said that. "I felt that something had broken within me, on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped. And invincible force impelled me to get rid of my existence in one way or another. And yet, while my intellect was working, something else in me was working too, and kept me from the deed. A consciousness of life, as I may call it, which was like a force that obliged my mind to fix itself in another direction and draw me out of my situation of despair. During the whole course of this year, when I almost unceasingly kept asking myself how to end this business, whether by the rope or by the bullet, during all that time, alongside of all of those movements of my ideas and observations, my heart kept languishing with another pining emotion. I call this by no other name than the thirst of God. Now, you've had that experience too. Many, many times. We all have had. And it's unfortunate that psychiatrists have not treated this properly. The only psychiatrist that I know who has done it in a thorough fashion and integrated it well is Dr. Paul Tournier of Switzerland. He understands that the consciousness has other depths, far more profound than those of which we've spoken. So that our lives, until this pneuma comes, is something very much like a flattened Japanese lantern. Then the lantern is opened, a candle is put into it, and immediately it reveals patterns, and design, and harmony. And so when this pneuma begins to take possession of our lives, we change. We have the same eyes at night as we have in the day. Why can't we see at night? Because we lack the light of the sun. And so this pneuma is a light. It illumines our intellect. It's a power. It gives strength to our will. It's a power. It changes our direction. And maybe it might be a good thing if we all resisted a few more temptations of the id and began to have the beautiful experience of accepting the temptations of the pneuma.
Bishop Sheen will return in a moment.
I have not told you what the pneuma is, have I? I'm not going to tell you. Because you've had it all your life. I want you to think about it and find out for yourself. Bye, and God love you.